morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical math. You study them hard and hoping to pass. Working your fingers right down to the bone. And the guy behind you won't leave you alone. Ring, ring goes the bell.
Today's the first day of fall and also a time when many are going back to school. But even if you're not a student, you may be caught up in it as a parent or a teacher. Luckily, Philip Galanis has come by to talk about dealing with teachers' bullies, separation anxiety, and all the other anxieties of just starting the school year again. Philip writes the Social Cues column for the Sunday Style section of the New York Times, and I'm very pleased that he was able to join us again on this show.
Thanks, Leonard.
And we have many options for you to join in on this conversation, even if you have advice for dealing with school issues from when you were a student. You can give us a call at 212-433-9692. Leave a comment on our show page at wnyc.org/Lopate, or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Philip, do you enjoy school?
I loved school, but let me say, I can remember every year on around Labor Day, I start getting a terrible knots in my stomach and serious anxiety.
Even now,
I think however we internalize the school year, I internalized it with all the anxiety of new things that I was going to have to learn to control and master, and my mailbox explodes in the first couple of weeks of school, not so much in the prep or even in the first days, but right about now when the class is in session, but there's been enough time for a bad relationship to get underway, a little teasing, a mom or a dad who's not happy with the child's placement. Kids in college are still homesick, and they're surprised by it, and their parents are surprised by it. So I think it's a really emotionally rich subject, and I still relate to a lot of it, even though I haven't been in school in about 2 jillion years.
And then parents are concerned about different things that can occur throughout the course of their kids' school career, ending with college, where they're often worried about alcohol and drugs,
sure,
and sex.
A huge percentage of the questions that come into me are about at what point in the process should the parent intervene, and because you don't do your child a favor or anyone a favor by intervening too quickly and solving his or her problems for them, how long do you let them or do you coach them to try to solve a problem themselves before you get involved?
It's funny how taunts from school days stay with people. One friend still remembers a teacher calling him beady-eyed. And I had this a former junior high school classmate write to me, say, "Are you the same Leonard Lopate who went to junior high school 50? And I wrote back, "Are you the same," I won't mention the name, "who made my life miserable because you bullied me for a year and a half? Would we do? Get together and talk about the bad old days?"
Exactly.
But I'm amazed that I have no desire to meet this person. I'm sure he's changed. I think he's a lawyer now. But I don't want to meet him. He only brings back bad memories.
Yeah, it's shocking, and it's shocking how selective all of our memories are. And he probably remembers a very different relationship with you, one marked by great humor. And you're remembering one marked by, you know, great torment. It's really rich, and it's so formative, and it does stick with you 40 and 50 years later.
What gave you the most trouble, the teachers or the other students?
Not teachers, because in my household, it was all about children managing adults and learning how to manage upward to allow my parents to keep the lid on things. They had to, keeping them calm was the important thing.
The kids felt that responsibility?
Yeah, it's a very amazing family, which I will tell you about at length some other time. But kids when you are, when I was a kid, especially when I realized I was a gay kid pretty young, before I knew words like gay or homosexual or any word like that.
Did the other kids spot that too?
I think some kids did, but I spotted that I had to be very, very careful not to give anything, not to give this terrible thing away. So I think it probably made me, for early in school, it made me much more withdrawn. And later in school, it made me much, much more exuberant because I had to create this personality that was somehow going to deflect from my true personality.
And kids can be cruel. I don't know whether things have gotten better in recent years, but I remember there was this very effeminate boy in the third or fourth grade, and we used to pass him notes saying things like, "Will you be my girlfriend?"
Yeah. No. Kids are really mean, and they continue to be mean. And if my mailbox is any indication, they are even meaner than before because now they're not passing a note. Now they're writing it on some Facebook page that's getting broadcast to 3,000 other kids who are all having a laugh at the expense of the poor kid who is just trying to get through the day like every single one of us.
And then there are the kids who just come to the school. They have transferred from another school, they've moved, whatever, and they have to then try to find a place when everybody right. else knows each other.
One of the greatest exchanges, sometimes after a question gets asked and answered in the paper, I'll find myself, surprisingly, in a correspondence with the person who's asked the question. And one of the things that she and I arrived at for her kid was, who was very troubled by the way another kid was being treated in the class, was to raise the kind of kid who will intercede on behalf of others. I mean, you know you've done a tremendous job as a parent or as a person when you are the one who is standing up for the kid who's having a rough time, because it usually just takes a word or two from you to stop the kid who is effeminate or new or a different race or a different social class or the scholarship kid. I went to this boarding school, and a generation or so before I got there, the scholarship kids used to have to wait tables. They used to have to wait as waiters on the kids who paid full freight.
That's rubbing it in.
And that's like real. I mean, we do amazingly cruel things to kids, and we just assume that we just say, "Oh, kids, they're so resilient. They'll just bounce right back." But all these things take a toll. So it's so important for us to try to help when we can see a chance to.
And a reminder that listeners can join this conversation. Our number here is 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at wnyc.org/Lopate, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is @LeonardLopate. You've been hearing from people about there still being lots of tears at drop-off, and it's hard to say goodbye. So
right.
how do you recommend that they deal with that?
Quickly. Because
if you linger, it gets worse.
It gets worse and worse. There are two things that I've seen actually be very successful in this area. One is practicing, so not doing it at 7:50 in the morning or 8:20 in the morning, but doing it on a Sunday night or a Saturday afternoon. You take your kid to the school, and then you arrange with a teacher to take a look at the room, and you take a look at the thing, and then you arrange to go do something really fun with him or her. Go do something that he really might like. But in the morning, when things are really rough, it's best to be as brisk as possible, because the tears, in my experience, the tears only grow louder if the child feels like he's getting a really sympathetic audience.
And then there's a whole matter of parents wondering how involved they should be in it all.
Yeah.
One mother wrote to you that a teacher's impatient with her son, and she doesn't like the teacher either. How do you deal with a teacher? Some teachers play favorites.
Well, some teachers play favorites, and some parents, you know, loving our children as we do, imagine that everyone must love our children as much as we do. But this teacher has, you know, 20 or 30 other kids to handle. And so it's about, I think, trying to gauge whether there is something that's really harmful going on or if there's just not perfect chemistry. One thing to remember is when you, with parents, one of the letters that I often get from teachers are from parents who will send 30 or 40 emails. Every day will bring a new email about something that went on in the classroom that didn't feel quite right to the child or the mother in the or father in hearing the story from the child. So rather than sending one every day, maybe wait a little while, wait longer, wait as long as you can. As if it's something as simple as, you know, he's not getting called on properly, or he's not, and parents' night is pretty soon in a lot of schools. That's a good opportunity to go meet the teacher face to face and talk about concerns that you might have.
My guest is Philip Galanis, who writes the Social Cues column in the Sunday Style section of the New York Times. Some teachers are just not good people. Sad to say, I remember a junior high school teacher who noticed that a certain kid was being picked on, and he, instead of protecting the kid, would say things like, "Will all the boys and Tommy stand up?"
Yeah,
and the boy wasn't. It wasn't that thing. The kid was even effeminate. It was just a way of saying to the other boys, you know, I recognize that this kid should be picked on.
Well, it's a way of bonding. It's a bullying. It's a way of bonding with. It's a way for an adult to bond with children at a really disturbing level,
especially when the kids are 13 years old and going through all of those early puberty things.
Right. But that's a pretty unusual story, Leonard. Most teachers are working and
trying
really
hard. I wonder
if Mr.
Goldman
really
is listening now. Let's take a call from Leslie from Old Greenwich, Connecticut.
Hello?
Yes, hi, Leslie.
Hi, and thank you for taking my call. And I just want to say I love your show, and also I love Mr. Galanis' column.
Can we ask, Leslie?
In a nutshell, I'm a grandmother, and my daughter is a single mother of two boys. And she is of this generation, kind of the one after mine, where she takes a very pacifistic kind of view of how you work out a bullying situation. And I know I shouldn't meddle in this, but I just have to find some peace in this, because I want to say to my grandson, if he bothers you, you bother him back twice as hard, because that's what I was taught. You know, the only way to deal with a bully is to go after them. And but I know that it makes my daughter wild, and hopefully the school can do this, but bullying is so pernicious and it affects them so badly. I kind of want to just buck up my grandson and say, "I'll stand up for you."
When you say pacifistic, what would your daughter like your son to do when somebody is bothering him?
Well, she says, "Tell a teacher." And when I was in school, of course, you were a tattletale if you did that.
Especially if the teacher revealed that you had come to him or her and said, "This kid is bothering me."
Right, right.
Yeah.
And so I guess I don't know if this is a fairly common phenomenon where you have two generations viewing how you handle bullies. I want them, they don't have a father present. And so I kind of want to say, well, get out there and give them, you know, whatever.
Right.
But that's my dilemma.
Do you get a lot of letters about bullying?
I get a lot of letters about bullying, and I think it's really important to raise your hand if it's happening to you. It's so hard if it's happening to you, because there's a tremendous, first of all, there's the pain of being bullied. Then there is the shame that you are being bullied, and so the idea of telling someone, whether it's a friend or, you know, a friend whose kids are savvy enough to understand that some kids are socially more powerful than the teacher is, or the teacher, or if not the teacher, because the kid isn't comfortable with the teacher, some other adult, either in the school or out of the school, the music teacher, the art teacher, whoever it is you're comfortable with. But speaking up is really important. I understand your grandmother. I understand your notion of you knock his block off and then he's never going to come near you again. But actually, I think that might not be the best way to handle this. Because then you're just freezing this terrible adversarial relationship in place. But
there's also no guarantee you're going to be able to knock the other kid's block off.
Well, so exactly.
The bullies often are really tough.
And to your second point, which is really the another very, very interesting point, what we have here is a great scenario. We have two adults who really love these boys, you and your daughter. And I think you can, under the right circumstances, away from the boys, privately with your daughter, probably not right when things are festering and you're upset or she's upset, but when you can have a quiet moment to say, what do you think, Susan, if you told Billy something like this? And she might get a little annoyed with meddling, but you could do it in a way that would not be problematic to her, but you can't overrule her, and you have to remember she is the mom. And I, even though we recognize your heart is in the right place.
Leslie, thank you for calling. We're going to go to break, but of course, this brings up a whole other thing for another show. We have discussed it in the past, grandmothers wanting to protect their grandchildren and sometimes giving advice that's not always appreciated, even if the advice is probably good advice.
Right.
We'll take a little break and we'll be back with more from Philip Galanis and your calls. Our number here, 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at wnyc.org/Lopate or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is @LeonardLopate. Philip, of course, writes the Social Cues column for the Sunday Style section of the New York Times.
Teacher's pet, I wanna be teacher's pet. I wanna be huddled and cuddled as close to you as I can get.
We're back with Philip Galanis, who writes the Social Cues column in the Sunday New York Times Style section. And we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at wmyc.org. And I suggest a little patience. Some people we were going to go to got tired of waiting, hung up, but it just gives a little time. It's okay. We'll try to get to everybody. Michael from Princeton, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. First of all, I just want to tell you I'm a really big fan of your show.
In fact, Michael, we're going to require that everybody who calls in from now on tells us how much they love me and love Philip Galanis.
I know. Well, I'm sitting here like chopped liver because Michael hasn't said anything about me.
Okay, Michael, go ahead.
Sorry. This is definitely a topic that I am passionate about. In middle and high school, I experienced some really rough bullying. One kid found out that I'm gay. And it's something that has stuck with me through all of these years since. And now I'm going to college in Princeton to be a music teacher because my music teacher made such a difference in my life and really gave me confidence that I didn't have before and really helped me recover from this experience. But it's something that I deal with every single day, and I get anxiety over almost every single day. It's still really hard for me to think of myself as being, you know, normal and just trying to move on past this experience. And I'm just wondering if you have any experience dealing with that, or what, you know, kids like me should do.
I think kids like us, Michael, should get involved in mentoring programs like crazy. And I'm sure that in and around the school system in Princeton, there are any number of high schools, middle schools, elementary schools, getting involved with a boys or girls club. You have an incredibly rich experience, have had an incredibly rich experience. It was a terrible experience, but you've been able to make it into a positive one. And for you, I think the best thing for you to do is help turn it, pay it forward.
And I think it's nice that you have decided to bring your experience into what you're going to be doing in the future as a teacher. You'll probably be a lot more aware of this sort of thing happening with your students.
Yeah,
absolutely. That's a big part of why I want to be a teacher, so that I can help students in the way that my teachers helped me when I was going through the bullying.
Michael, thank you so much for calling us.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Liz from Pound Ridge writes, my daughter is a sophomore and at an away college and hates it. She feels intimidated by the upperclassmen in her classes who are very cliquish and exclusionary. I would describe her as an introvert with a lot of anxiety issues. For her to confront the situation in class is not an easy thing. Any advice?
Well, I don't think she needs to. I guess, so she's had a full freshman year and the situation she didn't find her people. I think often that people, by the time that the freshman year is end, you found a few people. Mm-hmm. If she's in classes where she is surrounded by people who aren't making space for her, I think she needs to find a place on the school where there is a place for her.
Whether it's a literary magazine or a math club or whatever it is.
I don't know if she's in some kind of if these are required classes that she has to take. It's so possible. The one thing I know from colleges is that there are more sub-communities than you can possibly imagine. Maybe your daughter, now I don't want to blame the victim if she's feeling excluded, maybe she's not looking at the places where she would be welcomed with open arms. Sorry, go ahead, Lenny.
No, I was going to mention another thing that we got. A listener on Twitter says, my 6-year-old grandson is being bullied, but his teacher has a no-tattle policy, so he has resorted to hitting. And you don't want your kids to start hitting other kids.
That's the sort of thing where I do think that the parent could email the teacher and ask for a chance to talk with her or him on the telephone or come in after pickup one day, because that's a really no-win situation. I understand why no tattling can be very valuable, but if someone's being bullied and they have to be able to speak about it. Now, the thing that's interesting is your child, you're only hearing about this from a 6-year-old, so you've got to remember when the mother or father goes into the teacher, there could be a much more complex problem, complex story acting itself out that the grandchild is only explaining as bullying.
I'm speaking with Philip Galanis, who writes the Social Cues column in the Sunday New York Times Style section. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate, and we're getting lots of calls. Anita from the Upper West Side. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Well, of course, I love your show. But I am the grandmother, I'm sorry to say, of a bully, a 5-year-old bully. My reaction is to quick get him into therapy. Hitting and bullying.
Hits kids?
Other kids? Or his siblings? Other kids?
Both. Well, he just started kindergarten, and he's been reported for bullying.
Does he seem like, when you spend time alone with him, does he seem angry?
Oh, he's wary. He's always expecting to be to not get a fair shake.
Right.
He's always expecting to.
Right, it's coming out of a place where he's got a negative feeling about himself and the world.
What we used to say about people like that is he has a chip on his shoulder.
He has a chip on his shoulder, and you know something? I don't know that much about what you can do with child psychology with a kid that age, but it might not be a bad thing to get him into some kind of play group or some kind of group setting where he could where everybody could explore what a fair shake to him might feel like to him.
But are they suggesting therapy? Because I have a friend whose son bites people.
Is he also about five?
Around that age, yeah.
Yes.
And he's been told he shouldn't bite people, but he seems to enjoy it. It's almost some kind of a stimulation for him. He's been put into therapy. Most schools at this point are very aware of this sort of thing happening and dealing with it differently than they might have dealt with it 20 or 30 years ago.
Because I think the answer here is not that you hit your bad. I think the more effective fix will be, honey, why is it that you feel so bad that the only thing you can think to do is to hit somebody else? I don't know that requires a therapist particularly, but I know a therapist would be pretty awesome at that.
Before we get to another call, we've talked during the break about parents who want their kids to be switched to a different class, often the class with the smart kids.
Exactly. Everybody's child is brilliant, and everybody should have their children with the smart group. But I think we have to defer to the schools and the teachers and administrators who have a fairly complex way to assess who should be where and how to make things go. But on a similar line, I really want to say that if you're a parent and you are emailing or going in to see the teacher, it may be bottled something, your disappointment, anger, upset over how your child is being treated, but you have to go in as gently as the lamb as you can be, because this is a person that your child is going to have a relationship with for the entire year, and he or she is also a person who's really just trying to do a good job. And so really try to keep as measured and calm as you can, even though you've been seeing an upsetting situation unfold over several weeks.
Let's take another call. Nancy from the Bronx. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I am so glad to get to ask Philip this question. So I have teenagers. And they're big into social media, and as we transition into the school year, it's kind of hard to get them to disengage from that, to get their homework done and do those things that they have to do in the evenings. I don't know how to advise them how to disengage. They don't want to, and so there's a fight between us. And, you know, to say my mom has taken away my phone or whatever is, like, humiliating at that age. But I don't know what I can tell them to, you know, in a socially acceptable way that preserves their dignity.
Right.
To get off the phone and focus on what you need to do.
Why don't you make it a shared experience where the whole family... I don't know if we're talking about, like, say, 4 to 6 p.m. or if we're talking about maybe right after dinner from 7 to 9 p.m. Whenever they need to be doing their homework, you will be doing them, I promise you, such a favor if you will help them find a space without digital, where they're not constantly monitoring Instagram, Snapchat, Facebook, Twitter, whatever it is, and I think as a parent, as parents, as adults, we have a responsibility when somebody's, you know, these phones are like crack. Our dopamine levels do rise every time we get a text. So for you to, I wouldn't think of it as taking it away as much as presenting it as this is a time when the family for 2 hours is going to turn off its electronic devices and get some work done. And when the work gets done, actually try to sit around and chat for a few minutes. It's hard, but I really think you should try to do it.
I want to sneak Mary from Westchester County into this conversation. Hi, Mary.
Hello. I'm so happy to be on the air. I respect both of your work a lot, so thank you.
We have very little time, Mary.
Okay, so basically I'm just calling in because, especially in middle school, I was bullied a lot by other girls, and I was, you know, I was a bully myself at times, and I could be mean. And what I found really effective is both the bullied and the bullier was for just to confront the person who's doing it to you and say, excuse me, you may not talk to me this way. This isn't okay. You're hurting my feelings and you need to stop, and then walk away. And I found that that was a way to really stand up for yourself and take the power back a little bit, but also just kind of remind the person what they're doing. And now this doesn't work for everybody, but for me, when I would be mean to somebody, if someone would say to me, like, this isn't okay, and almost embarrass me in that way and, you know, bring me back to reality that I was hurting somebody else, that kind of stopped me in my tracks.
That's terrific. That's terrific. I mean, I think we have to have lots of tools in our tool belt when it comes to this issue, because it's pervasive. I mean, the more we can tell from this 1 hour, it's a pervasive problem.
In just a few moments we have left, one father told you that he suspects there's too much drinking at his child's school. And then there are parents who also worry about their kids engaging in sexual activity. Do they just have to let their kids work those things out for themselves?
Well, I think there is a way to keep in touch. I don't think a kid who is separated enough to go to college, I don't think he or
she... This is sometimes high school as well.
Of course, sometimes high school. And high school is slightly easier because you're in a position to monitor without seeming like the CIA. But if they're away, you have to be in... You have to be in touch with them. And we don't figure out what too much, you know, what enough is, or what the right amount is with perfection on the first try. We make mistakes. Kids will overdo it, but we have to keep them safe and we have to keep an eye on them.
And then there's peer pressure. I knew a very straight arrow kid, and he was looked down upon by the rest of the kids because he wasn't getting high with
right.
them.
I mean,
this is high school.
Again, I think it's the kind of thing where even if you're their parent and nobody really wants to talk to their parent, if you start sharing, when I start sharing my own experiences from that time with kids, they are very happy to be honest in return with me. If we create a no judgment zone, that can be really helpful, and it can be great for communication.
Philip Galanis writes the Social Cues column in the Sunday New York Times Style section. I look forward to it every week, Philip.
Thank you, Leonard.
I'm one of your biggest fans.
And IU, we've created this awful thing, pressure for everyone. I hope it goes on for the next 2 hours.
Thanks for coming by again.
Thank you for having me.
Still.